Hello everyone, I'm Karen Webster and welcome to The Matchmaker Is In. Today I'm joined by Matchmaker's co-author, economist David Evans. Hey David, thanks for joining me today. It's a long time no talk to.
Yeah, hey Karen, it's good to be back on the show. Sorry I've been away for a while.
So David and I are delighted today to be joined by Jed Kleckner, who is the CEO of Delivery.com, a matchmaker that brings together local businesses and consumers that want to buy from them. So Jed, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, and thank you also to David. Look forward to the conversation.
So we love this series because we get to learn all about what makes matchmakers tick, the problems they solve, and how they got started. And we're going to do all of that with Jed today. But let's talk a little bit about, first of all, the platform Delivery.com and the friction that you are overcoming. Lots of platforms say that they bring together businesses and consumers in local markets. What makes Delivery.com different?
So great question. So we are, and just by way of background, so we are a New York-based business with roughly about 2 million customers that buy from a growing number that is somewhere around 12,000 merchants on our platform every day. They're buying across different verticals, restaurants being the main category that we've traditionally operated in. But by the nature of our name, we are of the view that just like Amazon started in books and has kind of used as an anchor category to then cross and upsell our customers into other categories, we view the same as it relates to local commerce. So the replacement of the phone or fax as a way to place an online, a on-demand order for food, it made a lot of sense for that to evolve into being something that was done on a computer and now more recently by way of a smartphone. So that will evolve, of course, into other categories. In terms of really how we differentiate in the market, we are an asset-light business. So we operate, as you mentioned, as a matchmaker marketplace that brings those consumers on our platform in the biggest of cities in the U.S. with a growing number of merchants. But our view is that we are never going to be able to, because we are really a hyper-local experience, which means that the borough that you're in New York or the neighborhood that you're in Boston or whatever city you are in the U.S., depending on where you are, you're going to experience our platform very differently because what you see is what's available to you for delivery to that address. And so as a result of that, it's very important that we really further monetize our biggest asset, which is a supply network of merchant content, and we've done that over the last couple of years different really than most in that you can access our merchants either directly from our app or website, as well as a growing number of third parties that have integrated basically their demand with our supply. So if you go on to whether it be Yelp or more recently Facebook, our merchants, to the extent that they're active on our marketplace, are also active for receiving orders directly through those platforms. It's kind of a one-to-many publishing mechanism. So the merchant really activates on our platform once, and then anybody, as we build out a growing number of third-party networks as well, have access to that as a publishing area too. And that's important because merchants are focused on trying to drive as much business into their store as well as now increasingly online. The question is how do you do that in an increasingly complex environment, and we're trying to help them navigate that.
So why did you decide to approach the hyper-local market in this way? What gave you the idea?
Well, you know, so I started my career actually at Netscape, and so I'm dating myself a bit, and that was when obviously dial-up was very popular. And at that time, really three things were not in place. There wasn't a propensity to put credit card information online to the extent it is today. The cost of developing technology for a local merchant, but at scale, meaning doing something for one local merchant times the hundreds of thousands that are in the U.S. was really an insurmountable task. And then the third is the proliferation of mobile and what that really means in particular for commerce in a local environment. And so it was really just a matter of time for those things to be figured out. I moved to New York after business school, and New York was already a delivery market insofar, you know, New York has the saying of everything in a New York minute. So it was just a matter of time for the internet and commerce to kind of connect the dots in a market like New York, and I think so has gone New York. Many other markets in the U.S. have gone as well, in that as consumers have become more comfortable to pass credit card information online in a secure way, there is a growing number of people that use mobile devices not just for communicating with each other, but now for transacting. In fact, there's really an expectation as people graduate college and move to big cities, that the way that they interact with not only their friends but also now brands and merchants for purchase is through a mobile device. And the fact you can build technology now, many of the components of which we needed were already built through services in the cloud. The timing was right for something like this to operate and grow. We are now one of obviously a handful of operators in this space. We are one of the biggest in the New York market, and we grow obviously into other markets from there. And
I want to make sure that that I'm not confused on something and that our listeners aren't confused. So let me ask you this question. So you have all these merchants, right?
Yeah.
And you have all these consumers. What's the role of delivery.com in getting things between the merchants and the consumer? Do you have a boatload of vans riding around New York, or do you do something different?
Great question. So we are not in the business, despite our name, of actually fulfilling anything physically. So what we do is we write and provide software for a consumer to download an app or access our website. They type in an address, and what they then avail themselves to are merchants that can have things delivered to them. When they place that order, our job as the merchant of record is we swipe their credit card, pass their requested order over to the merchant online. The merchant confirms the order online on premise. We let the consumer know that the order is being prepared with some estimated delivery time, and then it is upon the merchant to actually handle the physical delivery to the consumer. Or in the last, call it 18 months, we've started to now operate with partners on the logistics side. An example is Uber has a product called Uber Rush, where they leverage a network of people on bikes or cars that will handle deliveries, not of people, but of things, of goods in urban corridors. So nowhere in that descriptive, David, are we actually handling the physical fulfillment, which is certainly different than some of the other platforms that are matchmakers that have evolved more recently, who are both matchmaker and kind of a labor network of people that are doing deliveries.
And therefore, in sort of our language, we would describe you as having started as a two-sided platform with consumers and merchants, and over time having developed the third side, which are the actual delivery companies.
That's absolutely right. So the two sides obviously being demand and supply, and then more recently having access now to the logistics piece, although we are not in it directly, our technology is integrated to those platforms.
Excellent. I got it.
So Jed, thinking back to the very beginning, and these are the tough problems that matchmakers have to work through in order to get the ignition to happen. And once everything is working, it all looks so easy. But as you well know, at the very beginning, it's anything but. So how did you go around and get businesses to sign on to the proposition that you were establishing a platform basically for local search that would give them access to consumers that wanted to buy things from them and have them delivered? What did you do to get enough merchants to agree to say, okay, I'll give it a try?
Yeah, well, so I think where it all starts, obviously, is, and a lot of this is now starting to become mechanized and self-provisionable, but back in the mid-2000s, which, scary as it is already now a decade ago, the mobile device had just been really introduced. It was in, I think, around 2006 or so that the iPhone came to market. And when we walked in, and to answer your question just bluntly, we would walk into merchants and have that conversation. So it was feet on the street. Now, what you would see is at first you would see apprehension from a merchant because their first reaction would be, I'm sorry, so are you saying that you're going to take away my customer? And the response would be, no, what we're saying is that there are an increasing number of people that are searching for a business like yours but really have no interest in accessing you in a physical way. So the question is, how do you extend your reach or your kind of brand presence online without actually having to make that a whole nother division of your so-called business? Because many of these people are running a single venue operation. Some obviously are running chains or franchises, but many of them, many of the thousands on our platform are really mom and pop oriented businesses. So what we're basically saying is, look, we are going to enable you to compete online. So we are building our business effectively on the backs of our merchants. So we're an enabler of commerce for you, the merchant. You don't have to pay to be on our platform, so there's no cost in signing up. and we only make money when we send you orders. So we are effectively a lead generation platform, sourcing leads that you otherwise would never get in front of. So it is effectively, in that way, 100% complementary to the business that you're already generating inside your venue. And by the way, we're bringing you people that you didn't know before that you can perhaps turn into regular customers for your in-venue business, and we will do nothing to stop you from accessing them. When you deliver your product, you certainly can have your delivery folks, you know, mention that, drop something in, hey, come visit us. So it was really a, there was some apprehension at first, but what you would start to see is that as merchants started to sign up, and it was a very hyper-local thing, is that a merchant on a particular street would see other merchants on that street receiving orders this way, then we started to get the reverse inquiry. So they would then start calling out saying, hey, I heard about your platform. Folks on the street, on my street are signed up. You know, what do I need to do to get onto the platform? A lot of what I'm describing, though, has now moved to a more mechanized provisioning, and that's better for us, obviously, because there's a big cost and capital of hiring a sales force, maintaining our accounts, meaning which are our merchant relationships with an account management team, maintaining menu content because arguably a restaurant, for example, will change their inventory usually by season, so that's four times a year. So there's menu updating and making sure that the menu is correct. So there's a lot of not only activation work but also maintenance work that to the extent that technology can replace it, it makes our ability to sign up more merchants easier.
So I'm going to get back to the merchant side in a minute, but now let's flip to the consumer side. So what did you do to get enough consumers interested in signing on either through the app or logging on and establishing an account online to give those businesses business?
Yeah, so we did that a couple of different ways. Some of it, the expected traditional route, we did some outdoor advertising. So one of the areas where you get some of the most concentrated volume of foot traffic is actually on the subways in New York. That has now become a place where a lot of these platforms will try to capture demand. But so we did some outdoor advertising as well as online advertising. So paying a platform like Google for paid search. So using search engine marketing as a way to drive consumers to our website. The other thing, though we did is that once people were on our platform, we enabled them to then tell their friends in return for money, right? So, hey, if you tell your friend, you can give your friend $7 off their first order, and in return for that, we'll give you $7 off your next order. As well as we have a loyalty program. So we have a points program that can be converted into now one of three things. You can use those points to convert into value on the platform. So no different than if you were to have a card at Bloomingdale's or an American Advantage, you know, collecting miles. So you can convert it for value on the website. You can convert it into goods that we you can choose basically, as, you know, on the website. And then thirdly, we also allow you to change it into dollars that can be directed to charities that are part of a charity network that we've built on the site. So it's a combination of acquiring through kind of traditional marketing channels and then using our own platform as a way for our most loyal of customers. And we refer to our customers really in three categories. We call them loyalists, tourists, and fanatics. And what that basically means is the number of times you've ordered on the platform, and those kind of thresholds for us give us a view as to the likelihood that you're going to reorder on the platform. Once you've become a reorderer on the platform, it becomes habitual. Once it's habitual, we want to obviously leverage your enjoyment on the site and to have that amplified with other potential new customers who you know and we have not gotten in front of. More recently, though, we've now used these third parties like Yelp as a way to also get customers onto the platform. So we expose our merchant content directly inside of a third party's website. So if you go to Yelp and type in a merchant, you can obviously read reviews about that merchant. There's no reason you shouldn't be able to order from them directly inside of Yelp using our content. So that's another mechanism where, in that case, the traffic coming to us we don't pay for, but in exchange for getting that traffic from Yelp, we pay them a revenue share on an order that's placed on our platform.
Have you guys developed any rules of thumb for how many consumers and merchants you need to get on the platform to really get momentum, or what Karen and I would describe as getting to the point where you're you're igniting in a particular market?
Yeah, great question. So what we do is we actually we plot points on a map. So if you were standing on a street corner on the Upper West Side as a consumer, what would you see standing at that point? Maybe you heard of a technology called CartoDB. They basically have mapping technology. So what we do is we take data that we have in our database and layer it on top of a map, right? So it's a way to visualize our data in a kind of a topographical or geographical context. And then we put points on that map and we say, how many merchants at this particular point? Now move that point one block over and one block up. How many merchants are accessible from that point? And we have basically minimum thresholds. If the minimum thresholds are met, that means then we can start marketing to consumers that are in that zip code or that particular borough, right? And if it's not met, meaning we've in the past been marketing there, but for one reason or another, maybe a merchant shut down, meaning it's no longer a business, or they've come off our platform for one reason or another, then it's our job to go then and activate another merchant in that area, because until we reactivate other merchants, we're going to stop doing marketing in that area. So we know that there are minimum thresholds of content that are required for us to have the highest level of conversion, meaning we're just optimizing for, if you're a consumer coming to our site and you want to choose between three different cuisines and you only have one, there's a lower likelihood that you're going to return to the site. So we know that we need three different options for you, right? And so within a particular cuisine type, we have to go perhaps deep enough so you have options, but not so deep that we're now starting to cannibalize the orders across too many merchants within that category. So it's a...
And you're signing up the merchants who are agreeing to join this in anticipation that you're eventually going to get enough merchants in the area in order to turn on the consumer marketing engine.
That's right. And the other thing that we can do is consumers will come to the site. They will not see merchants that are there, right? And we then ask them, hey, we're not able to fulfill your request. Give us names of merchants that you like, and we'll go and call them on your behalf and sign them up on the platform. And when you are a merchant, you receive a phone call from a platform saying, look, I know because I have the data to show for it that there is latent demand for our product on your street. Would you be interested in signing up? It's no cost. It's a pretty easy conversation to be had, meaning that there's demand there, but there isn't a matching supply. So help us provide that supply, and we can start driving you orders.
Got it.
So I have a question about filters and vetting of merchants, and uh-huh. It's a couple of different tangents on that. What is your filter for letting a merchant on the platform? Is it anyone who wants to be part of your platform, or do you have conditions?
Well, when we started, we certainly were less discerning about the merchants that would come onto the platform. As we've developed, obviously, our marketplace in certain markets, we're less inclined to just sign up another merchant. So they have to fulfill certain requirements. And certainly one of the things that we've done, we've now started to evolve the offering on the merchant side within restaurants, in particular. I'll talk about another vertical as an example. From small mom and pop shops to more regional operators and now even national chains, because traditionally the national chains and the regional operators were very apprehensive because they really were very brand oriented, and they felt that commingling their brand with other brands was not something that they wanted to participate in. But the reality is it's no different than when you walk into Bloomingdale's, you can buy a shirt from Ralph Lauren, just like you can walk up the street on Madison Avenue and buy it from their flagship store, because we have foot traffic. And so as long as we merchandise correctly, then you're starting to now see the bigger brands come onto the platform, and that's good for us because too many options becomes a paradox of choice. In another category, David, did I cut you off?
No.
Okay, and so in another category, though, in the case of, for example, liquor delivery, because you're buying based on the brand, not the merchant, we are not of the view that we need many merchants. We need just enough carrying the requisite items in that case, so it's an item-based decision, for you to be activated on the platform. And then we have this concept of kind of primary and secondary merchants. Depending on your address, we will best match the thing that you're trying to buy to a merchant based on distance rating and inventory availability. So you don't really care at that point which merchant it comes from because you're loyal to the item or the brand as opposed to the merchant that's handling the fulfillment.
Got it. Thinking about
Karen, I have a follow-up question on that, but I don't want to interrupt your train of thought.
So maybe this is the question that you were going to ask, but governance, I know, is a topic David likes to talk lot about. And see, I anticipated. So how do you preserve the integrity of the service when you're really not enabling the service, you're just making the match? Suppose you have a dud of a merchant that is always late or cancels out orders. What do you do?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think this is the beauty of a marketplace, is that we can collect a fair amount of data that can give us signals as to how a merchant is performing on the platform. And you brought up one of them, which is that we enable our merchants, when they provision onto our platform, to set an estimated delivery time, right? We also enable our consumers, after purchasing on our site, to review and rate that order. And that order, is, in the case of like a restaurant, is tied to a merchant. And so we're collecting a fair amount of data on what consumers, and again, you can only review a merchant on our platform if you've ordered from them, right? So it's not just, hey, I don't like the banner outside, or I don't like the fact that they didn't have enough chairs. It's the fact that I ate the food and I didn't like it, or I ordered from them and they posted one estimated delivery time, but another really is what occurred. And so we're collecting that data, and then we have kind of, think of it as a way by which to police our merchant network, and those that are not keeping up with certain expected thresholds are given, first of all, a polite warning, and secondly, told that they're going to be temporarily deactivated, and then thirdly, are permanently taken off the platform. And so we are increasingly vigilant about this, because at the end of the day, we are enabling merchants to operate on the platform. It's free to be on the platform, but you are not required to be on the platform, and we are not required to offer you service if you can't operate in a way that we believe is necessary to be able to offer our merchants, I'm sorry, our consumers, the optimal experience. And by the way, I'm talking as a consumer when I say this. I, as a consumer, would expect that a marketplace would be governing the supply that they put in front of me. It's just no different than a department store. I don't want just anything to be merchandised in front of me. I want it to be merchandised with purpose. And that's going to cause me to want to come back and buy.
So, David, did you have a follow-up question, or?
No, that was my question. You did an awesome job at asking it, and Jed did a great job at answering it.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Karen.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that the other thing is that we've now pulled into our experience, for example, Yelp ratings. And so Yelp ratings and Yelp reviews. And so what that allows you to have is a kind of a multi-layer of information, which is not only what people are saying about the orders that they place, but then there's a little bit more holistic view on the merchants themselves. So there are an increasing number of tools and APIs, frankly, that are out there that we can pull in or integrate into our platform to create as much transparency for a consumer who's placing basically an order at distance, right? So they're not in the merchant. They don't know maybe anything about them. How can they be better informed before they make that purchase? And the more we can give them based on what other people have experienced or what other people have seen, the better. The other thing is that when it comes to the merchants themselves, is that there is a bit of self-policing, right? Is that we tell them, look, we are going to monitor this, so it's on you to confirm the orders within a certain amount of time and deliver it within the time that you say you're going to deliver it. Because I can tell you at the end of the day, when it comes to on-demand commerce, the thing that people are most concerned about is accuracy as opposed to speed. When you tell me that you're going to deliver within 30 minutes, then you better get it to me within 30 minutes. And that's often what I think people have realized they love about the beauty of Amazon, which is that they'll say it's going to be delivered in 6 days and it shows up in three. So they clearly under-promise and over-deliver, and that is something that causes people to come back in spades.
So speaking of Amazon, they certainly have their eyes on these local markets as well and are doing a number of things to leverage their basic, capabilities, Prime membership, and logistics. Is that a worry for you?
So I think it's a worry for the merchants, and that's where we step in, is that I think we're acting on behalf of the merchants so that they can compete with a company like Amazon. Without question, Amazon is a competitive threat for us. But if anything, they've raised awareness about the fact that consumers can do this. So it's always the case of kind of the push and pull of, is it better to have no competition or is it better to have a lot of competition? I think for us, it's better to have the right competition. And if we're kind of in the same conversation, if we're being mentioned alongside companies like that, that's actually a good thing. It just causes us to have to be really smart about how we spend our money and what we do, because they're obviously a force to be reckoned with. So I think for us, our job is to focus on what we do, is that we enable merchants to compete with Amazon. Amazon is building a platform that is best for Amazon. We're building a platform that's best for the merchant. So I think that we offer something similar, but certainly with a different end game.
In the time that we have left, we generally like to get thoughts of matchmakers about the matchmaker platforms that they admire and perhaps even gave inspiration for developing their own. Any come to mind for you?
And I think certainly the platform, so you know, we've been in business now for over 10 years. So on some level, I guess we're ancient in this space of on-demand. In New York, at least, you know, the first operators in the space were Delivery.com and Seamless. Seamless is now part of a public company. I would say that what inspired me, just in general as a consumer, is also when I was at Netscape. This is in the late, you know, 90s, early 2000s, was for lack of maybe a sexier website, I think Craigslist was always something that intrigued me, as well as what, you know, on some level what eBay was doing. Really, I think Craigslist, insofar as that I was living in San Francisco at the time, and when I moved to New York, Craigslist was not really something people used. It's changed now. It certainly is something people use a lot more, but there are many other platforms that probably do in a more Web 2.0 and a consumer-friendly way what Craigslist had, you know,
it was an early example of a hyper local platform.
That's right, and it was exceptionally efficient. I mean, it just worked. You know, it was quirky. It's in many ways not the best user experience, but it got the job done, and it really inspired, I think, me from the standpoint of that it goes to show that when you give consumers the ability to kind of self-govern, it can be actually done in a pretty efficient way. Now, a lot of tools and technologies have come out since, and perhaps they're better looking and solve the problem better in certain ways, but Craigslist is still a formidable operator in the space, both in places like San Francisco and even more so now in places like New York.
Interesting. Well, Jed, this has been a fascinating conversation. The time has just really zipped by. David, any final thoughts from you before we let everyone?
No, I'm just going to, you know, make an observation on, you know, what's kind of dominated the conversation in the last few minutes, which is the governance mechanisms for these platforms and like Delivery.com and how they do things in order to promote trust among both sides of the platform and enforce things. I mean, it's just a tremendous part of the value that's generated by these kinds of businesses, and I'm glad that we're able to spend some time talking about that today, because it extends from Craigslist all the way to what Delivery.com is doing and a lot of the other platforms out there, and it tends to be not talked about enough in terms of how they create value.
Well, Jed, thanks very much for sharing a lot about your business, what inspired you, how you got started, and what you're doing to leverage your platform in the future. Thanks very much for taking the time.
And thanks to both of you.
Happy holidays to you, Jed, and to everyone listening. Thanks very much. Until next time. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Happy New Year.